This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Last week I read from Chapter 7 of Ben Goldfarb's Crossings, How Road Ecology is Shaping the Future of Our Planet. He also wrote a book I read from not too long ago about beavers called Eager, The Secret Surprising Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. It's out in paperback, by the way. I'm an unabashed fan. I promised to read more this week from the Monarch Butterfly chapter of Crossings. I ran into a headwind of time constraints, so I will summarize the monarch story somewhat by reading parts of the chapter and then continue on with some highlights from the rest of the book and end with some of the epilogue. Here to start is more about the monarch butterfly's central north-south migration route and Ben's description of the coincidence of Interstate Highway 35's path north and south. Here's Ben. As it happened, a disproportionate amount of butterfly habitat fell along one road, Interstate 35, the freeway that runs nearly 1,600 miles from Duluth, Minnesota to Laredo, Texas. The heartland's metropolises, Minneapolis, Des Moines, Oklahoma City, Dallas, lie along I-35 like rosary beads. Between these outposts stretch cornfields, pothole lakes, American Gothic farmhouses, and prairies that slip through development's clutches. Larry McMurtry called this austerely beautiful corridor the long and lonesome I-35, but to a monarch, it's the most bustling place on earth. By coincidence, the interstate parallels the central flyway with uncanny precision. A butterfly could drift from Minnesota to Mexico without leaving I-35's side. And I will start to summarize here. Attention has been paid to this route with milkweed seed plantings and scientific study. The University of Minnesota's Emily Snell Rood has done extensive studies of how various pollutants, the salt, the zinc, copper, noise, and various other things that wouldn't occur inland away from the highway's effect, how they affect monarch reproduction and growth. And Emily Snell Rood and her students even released 3,000 marked monarchs to migrate to Mexico. And there are entomologists who think that planting milkweed along highways is the wrong thing to do, and they feel passionately about that. And Ben visits with all of them and goes into great detail, richly colored descriptions of their work and what they're finding out in the science that they're doing. Further chapters I'll go on to summarize now. In Chapter 12, Ben travels to Asia and South America, where new roads are being conceived with animals in mind, more than here in North America, where we are tinkering around the edges of making changes for animals. Ben writes in Chapter 12, "In the United States, protecting animals from roads tends to be a rearguard action. We retrofit, tinker, and slap up sporadic wildlife crossings, forever trying to undo intractable, decades-old errors. By contrast, less intensively built nations aren't saddled with an ancient sclerotic highway system. Instead, they're still shaping themselves, giving ecologists the chance to intervene before their road networks are calcified. When the Indian government constructed a new highway through a tiger reserve in 2019, for instance, it elevated the road on concrete pillars, permitting animals to wander the forest floor unperturbed. Quote, we think we're such leaders, one American ecologist told me. And then you go to India and you're like, wait, they're just going to lift the highway? Unquote. What's more, different countries are home to different animals who interact with roads in distinctive ways. Rainforests, for example, are rife with primates, howler monkeys, lemurs, lorises, who spend their lives clambering through the canopy, seldom descending to earth. Tropical habitats are thus three-dimensional, requiring conservationists to heal the road's gash in the treetops as well as at ground level. Road ecologists have responded with canopy bridges, flimsy-looking rope courses that have reconnected forest fragments for colobus monkeys in Kenya, gibbons in Taiwan, and capuchins in Brazil, although North America's porcupines, martens, and flying squirrels could surely use a few bridges of their own, the United States remains a laggard in the field of canopy connectivity, with much to learn from its creative equatorial peers. Unquote from Ben. In chapter 13, he writes about how all this affects us. This chapter is called Reparations. Can we undo the damage highways have wrecked on cities and human lives? The same engine noise that chases off birds ramps up our own cortisol production. The same pavement that sweeps motor oil into Puget Sound absorbs and discharges solar radiation, forming urban heat islands that make hot summers deadly. The same salt that's turning Midwestern lakes into estuaries, corroded pipes in Flint, Michigan, and released lead into its water supply. The same traffic that cleaves bobcat populations contributes to our social isolation. The same freeways that thwart Los Angeles's cougars made road-raging commuters more prone to committing domestic violence. Roads so transmute our lives that one scholar has described Homo sapiens as an infrastructure species, an organism whose essential trait is that it is shaped by its own construction. Ben always goes on to visit and report on people who are working to remedy all these problems. In the epilogue, called The Anthropause, he writes, "By all means, slow down at night, break for snakes, and shepherd salamanders across the pavement. Yet making roads lie lighter on the land isn't the job of individual drivers, any more than swapping out light bulbs will solve climate change. Instead, it's a public works project, one of history's most colossal. Like reforestation, species reintroductions, and the planting of oyster reefs, it's part of what the historian Thomas Berry described as humanity's great work. Quote, moving the human project from its devastating exploitation to a benign presence, unquote. A solar panel on every roof, a wetland on every floodplain, a wildlife crossing at every migration corridor. And our investment in crossings must be matched by our commitment to habitat preservation, an overpass whose surroundings get developed into strip malls and condos is just an expensive bridge to nowhere. Quote, a thing is right, Aldo Leopold famously wrote in his call for a land ethic, when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community, unquote. By that standard, roads are the wrongest things imaginable, agents of chaos that shatter biotic integrity wherever they intrude. Perhaps we need an analogous road ethic, an aphorism that pithily encapsulates what makes a road right and what makes it wrong. A road is right when its planners have done everything within their power to avoid disrupting the biotic and human communities through which it passes, perhaps. Or a road is right when it, like its masters, belongs to the land instead of conquering it. Ultimately, it's hard to improve on the dictum that the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes applied to Highway 93, one of North America's finest road ecology projects. The road is a visitor. And at the end of the epilogue, he visits the Snoqualmie Pass with a Forest Service biologist named Patty Garvey Darda, who was one of the major forces behind the creation of this great wildlife crossing. The Snoqualmie Pass, which is about 50 miles southeast of Seattle, where various large habitats on ancient pathways come together at Interstate Highway 90. Quoting Ben, we climbed to the bridge's apex. It was my first time atop an overpass since 2013, when I'd strolled up the U.S. 93 crossing in Montana, and the state of road ecology's art had advanced in the intervening years. Concrete walls blocked the sight and sound of traffic, and scattered rock piles and logs afforded cover for rodents and amphibians. Nursery-grown seedlings, snowberry, wild rose, maple, poked from aromatic mulch. Silver tags denoted spots where the soil had been inoculated with endemic fungi, and Douglas fir snags beckoned to woodpeckers. Elk scat lay everywhere, whole herds often bedded on the overpass, cows nursing calves and bulls jousting as trucks hurtled beneath them. That to me is the coolest thing that I didn't anticipate, Garvey Darda said. I thought they'd start on one side and make a run for it. But no, they're hanging out there, doing their behaviors. It's part of their home range now, unquote. Although elk were the bridge's most enthusiastic occupants, smaller creatures used it too. The overpass was kitted out with pitfall traps, low aluminum strips that funneled jumping mice, shrews, toads, and other tiny crossers into buried buckets where they could be counted and studied. Most of the critters who tumbled into the buckets were habitat generalists, intrepid explorers who could persist in almost any environment, but as shrubs and trees flourished atop the overpass, rarer forest specialists like flying squirrels and snowshoe hares might turn up as well. Some small animals, the redback vole, say, would spend their entire lives darting among the rock piles. Like Los Angeles' Liberty Canyon overpass, the Snoqualmie Crossing was less a bridge than an environment, a span both alive and lived upon. Atop the crossing, I tried to conjure its future, the canopy thickening, firs scraping the sky, the black bear padding through in fall, bound for a den in the volcanic debris of a distant mountain, the bobcat gliding over powder, tufted ears perked to a hare's munching, the fisher, tail bushy and eyes avid, scrambling up a hemlock, the Douglas squirrel chittering its statico alarm, the western toad, the Cascades frog, the alligator lizard making their slow and secret progress, the wolverine stalking south toward the rumor of a female, all curved claws and bottled ferocity, the forest quailing with his passage, the shrew skittering between logs, noticed only by thermal cameras and pygmy owls. Lives not on the road, but over and beyond it, a road that animals would never meet, a road the land would never notice. And that's the end of Ben Goldfarb's Crossings, How Road Ecology is Shaping the Future of Our Planet. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. You can find archived Natural Wonders programs on the wdrt.org website. Thank you so much for listening.